To start today, I just want first to clarify that with you that everything is clear, because I know that we're seeing many different things, sometimes in details, and so sometimes the big picture is a bit like lost. So just to clarify things, so our classical starting point for loop quantum gravity is, of course, the Hamiltonian formulation of GR in terms of the first order connection and triad variable. So we started with Palatine actions, and we did the canonical analysis of this action, and we found a kinematical phase space described by a connection, and E here now is the densitized triad. And with this phase space, we have a system of first class constraints. So just to make things clear, so we are dealing with 3D, which is a quite simple system. So we have the Gauss constraint, which is going to generate internal SU2 gauge transformation, and the flatness constraint, which is to generate the translation symmetry. Okay, so here the idea why 3D is so simple is also because the diffeo symmetry can be rewritten as some rotation symmetry and translation symmetry. Okay, and in 4D, when we go to the 4D case, we will still have the Gauss constraint, and then we will have the diffeo constraint, which usually is written as a vector constraint, which generates the diffeomorphisms on the spatial hypersurface, and then we have the constraint, scalar constraint, which is going to generate the time reparametrization. Okay, so this is just for the picture at the kinematical, at the level of the kinematical phase space, and the idea of the Dirac's program when you have a first class constraint is first to quantize to get the associated Hilbert space for the kinematical phase space, and then transform constraint as operators, okay, and act with these operators to get the physical Hilbert space. In the first step of Dirac program we did yesterday, it's to choose the basic variable we are going to promote as operator. And so for that, we started from our continuous variable, the connection, and the triad, and we replaced them by some holonomy and flux living on a graph. Because so here, what we did is that we smeared the classical Poisson algebra, okay, formed by the canonical pair A and E, by introducing oriented graphs. So of course, to introduce this variable, I talk only about curves, but the generalization is in fact that now you can see your that on your hypersurface you have many graphs. And so the idea is that there is in fact here two steps that sometimes are really done like only one step. Okay, so there is really one step where here it's a kind of discretization, and we are still at the classical level. And so that's why now here for us, we are here. And what I want to do is to give you a geometrical interpretation of this discrete phase space. But then usually, in most of the paper of loop quantum gravity, you go directly from here to the canonical, because then the next step would be to transform this variable as operator, okay, to represent this variable as operators, and then talk about the Hilbert space associated to a graph, which is going to be called the spin network Hilbert space here. Okay, but so here for us, we haven't done this step yet, and we are still here, and so it's a bit a new approach to now try to understand at this classical level, but discrete level, what you can say already. And so why is it interesting? It's because so this is a kind of truncation of the classical phase space of gravity. Okay, you have only here finite degrees of freedom when you work with a fixed graph. And we will see that we have a nice geometrical interpretation, which is going to be moved to the quantum case. Okay, and also it allows to ask some Yeah, some important question only at the classical level that we could have for the quantum level. And so yeah, so we are here, and I'm going to try to give you the geometrical interpretation of this variable. And so if you are interested in this issue, you can have a look to the article of by Laurent, Mark, and Jonathan, so which is called Continuous Formulation of the Loop Quantum Gravity Phase Space, where here they really show the exact relationship between so the finite dimension discrete phase space and the phase, this continuous phase space of the loop quantum gravity phase space. So it's by Laurent. So Mark, with postdoc here now, and Jonathan, who used to be a PhD student of Laurent Zipric. And you can find it on archive. So okay, so let's now consider a graph. So I'm going to consider a specific graph, so which is dual to a triangulation here, okay, and see what are the geometrical interpretation of this variable. Okay, so yesterday I think we've seen that. So if I consider now a trivalent vertex, okay, so this is a graph with only three links, okay, three edges and one vertex. So then the dual graph here is just a triangle. And indeed we can say that so to this vertex you have, so let's consider that you have only outgoing edges. Okay, so at this vertex, you have three fluxes variable, one for each edge, okay, associated. So if I did that 1, 2, and 3, you have x1, oh, e1, sorry. Yeah, so in most of the literature, the flux is called x and not e once you are in the. And of course, you have. For each of these tags, you have SU2 group element. So the holonomy H is the SU2 group element here. And so the Gauss constraint in this framework is just that the sum of the E, where the vertex V, so let's call this vertex V, belongs to the edge E is equal to 0. Okay, so the precise link between the continuous Gauss constraint we have seen and this constraint can be found in this article, okay? Well, it's in 4D, but it can be really generalized to the 3D case. But this here you can see that, what does it mean? That means that the total flux through a vertex here is 0. And in fact, if you remember what was the Gauss constraint in the continuous variable was just that the covariant divergence was of the flux was equal to 0. So in fact, if you apply, you see that this is in accordance just because it's a kind of generalization of the, if you want, Stokes theorem of the divergence theorem, okay? Because if this is integrated over this surface, this exactly gives you that over this boundary here, you have that the E has to be equal to 0, and it's exactly what this is telling you, okay? So geometrically, this is seen as the closure of triangle where we interpret the E variable as three vectors describing so the edge of the triangulation, okay? Where the E here is interpreted as a three vector describing the edge of the triangulation. Where here, so the triangulation is the dual to my graph. So if this edge is the edge E1, then on my triangulation, it's associated to an edge E1 star, and this one is okay, and so from only this variable, so the E variable here, you can in fact extract the intrinsic geometry completely. So this means, so we can and indeed the length. So what do you need for the intrinsic geometry? You need to know the length of an edge E star of your triangulation, and this is given just by the norm of E. And you also have that you can compute dihedral angle, 2D dihedral angle, so angle between for your triangle, so 2D. And this is just given by the scalar product between. So if you look at this angle here, the cosine of this angle is just given by the scalar product of E1 with E2, and then you just normalize by the norm. Okay? So here we add that the angle between E and E prime is just up to a sine, depending on the orientation of your edges here. Okay, so this is just for the intrinsic geometry. And so now let's have a look, but we are still missing one constraint, okay, which is so the flatness constraint. So now let's add this constraint and see what this means. Okay, so flatness constraint on the triangulation. So first, let's try to relate. So here we are going to write the flatness constraint. Yeah, sorry.
Can we be imposing that the lines of the dual graph are exactly orthogonal to the original graph?
Yeah, so here, yeah, so in the dual picture, it's a kind of convention. You remember that we say that we wanted that you have a transversal crossing, and then you can choose that it crosses at the right at the middle of your curve. So here it's now we are dealing just with simple here straight line. So yeah, you can.
But over there we had the freedom that could intersect at any angle, right? And now we're restricting to this.
But it's just that. So you want, so it's, so here it's just that you have the Gauss constraint tell you that, okay? So this can be really, it's, so if you see that as a three vector, it really tell you that you have a triangle which is closed, okay? And so then the way you draw this triangle with respect to this, the dual graph, you don't really have to, yeah. It just, So what is important is just this equation here, which tells you that it's, if you interpret this as a three vector, you can see that as a triangle which is closed, okay? So you don't really have to have that it's, even in my drawing, it's not like, it's not perpendicular, okay?
But will you assume that the angle in that between E1 star, that triangular angle is exactly equal to the angle you have at the
center,
right?
Yeah, so you're right that here we do this. Yeah, and that's true that, so here I gave you that you interpret the E as a three vector describing the edge, but sometimes, so here everything is flat, so we don't have really any issue, but you're right that sometimes we say that it's a normal to the, coming for this, from this edge, so, yeah, so you're right that here we have this, this restriction on the, but yeah, it's also because here, so I'm restricting on a specific graph, which is dual to a triangulation, and so it's the way you draw, indeed. So then when we're going to go one dimension higher, yeah, it's the way you represent. This is going to be the normal to zero. When you draw the dual, yeah.
So it's just a convention.
Yeah. Okay, so, and again here, we are really dealing with a simple graph because it can be seen as dual to a triangulation. And in this case, yeah, to get this interpretation, you choose this convention. All right, okay. Sorry about that. So now let's go to the flatness constraint. So what I want to do now is to, so the flatness constraint is going to be, given by saying that the parallel transport around the face of the graph, okay, any face of the graph has to be trivial. And I want to show why this is related to the flatness constraint we have seen in the continuous case. So let's just consider a small curve here. So I'm going to show that at the infinitesimal level. Because so what I'm going to, so let's first consider a simple case. If we consider that we are dealing with an abelian group, okay, you know that in this case, so this is not our case, but I think you will have to look at this problem in the next homework or assignment, I don't know, where you look at the holonomy for an abelian group, and in this case, where here we consider a closed curve. Okay, when it's abelian, you can forget about the path ordered exponential, and you just get this. And so using Stokes' theorem, you just get that this is the exponential of around this any surface bounded by the closed curve of dA, and this gives you just the relation between the flatness constraint here, okay? But so there exists a generalization to this in the case of a non-abelian group, but I'm not going to show this in the general case. I'm just going to show that, so non-abelian case, I'm just going to show that at the infinitesimal level. To show you the relation. Okay, so again, I'm considering gamma, a closed curve here, and so I can rewrite my, at the first order, my holonomy as identity minus where here A is a contraction of A with the tangent vector to the curve, as I gave previously. GS one. So this is just the path integral, path order exponential at the second order, expanded at the second order. Okay, so in the first term, we can have use the Stoke theorem directly. And this is going to give you, you get as a term the integral over, so the surface bounded by your closed curve of dA. And this is a term of order epsilon square, where here epsilon, we say that epsilon is going to be the length of our curve, okay? Now let's have a look to the second term here. So this one, and I'm going to rewrite this term in a certain way to show what are the contributions. So here we cannot commute things, okay? It's a non-abelian group, so we can rewrite this term as an antisymmetric part and a symmetric part, okay? So we just rewrite it. So this term is going to be 1/2 of 1 0 S2 DS1 DS2 of okay, so this is my symmetric term plus an antisymmetric term, which is to S2 DS1. DS2, and now it's with a minus. Okay. So let's call this S sim, and this one is S. Okay, so in fact, this term, since now it's symmetric, you can rewrite, you can simplify it, and you just get that this can be rewritten as 1/2 of the integral over 0,1 of A dS squared. And so this is of the order. So in fact, we are not going to take any contribution for this term. So now let's have a look to this second term. Here. So this is, I'm going to rewrite that in terms of coordinates. So A gamma 0 so it's an here I'm doing an approximation, okay? So I'm taking just the value of A at the origin of my closed curve. And so here it's an approximation. And so here now I can rewrite this as DS1 of the tangent vector S2 along S1 minus B S2 plus some higher contribution. And so now if I'm just looking at these two integrals here, so this is equal to, I can integrate over S1, so I get that this is ds gamma, sorry, no point here, b of s minus okay, so here I just integrated over S1. Ds okay, so now in terms of coordinate on the curve, I can rewrite this as along gamma. Minus xb dxa. Yeah, maybe. So here, the other way, it's bab, sorry. And so once again, using Stokes here, you can say that this is the integral over the surface bounded by your curve of d of and then you can simplify because so d of dxa is 0, so you get here that this is the integral of there is a minus if I write this in this way of dxa wedge dxb. Okay, so let's use this result to simplify and get what is the term. So you should see what is the term that I get now. And so this means that, so is equal to minus a wedge a plus some bigger contribution. And so this means that here I can really write my holonomy as identity minus dA wedge A, where here, so if you rewrite everything in terms of coordinate, this is exactly the expression I gave you for the curvature. Okay, so I let you check if you agree with that. And so in particular, where here it's so what do we conclude here? This means that now the curvature can be approximate, so with holonomies around a small closed loop, but this can be generalized to anything. So this means that now if we want to impose f is equal to 0, we are going to impose that holonomy around any closed loop is going to be equal to identity. Okay? It's trivial. So this is what we're going to do now. So this one. Okay, I don't know why I cannot put it up. Okay, so yeah, so I'm not sure you're completely familiar with this notation here. Yeah. Oh,
can you repeat how you got to that first line?
Let me just put this back. So which one?
the board on the top, the bottom line?
Yeah.
How do we get to that? I mean, what's the approximation?
So for?
The last line.
The last line here?
Where you've written S asymmetric.
Yeah, it's because, so you see that, so AS, okay, was AA of S. Okay, and here it's just that I did the approximation because I have chosen, so on, it's on the curve. We are interesting just at the value on the curve gamma. And here I just have chosen the approximation to choose A at the origin. So instead of S here, I put 0, so it's not S dependent, so I can just put outside the, okay? So this is just the approximation I did here. Okay, so let's see how we are going to use this now in our framework. So now the flatness, we are going to ask that parallel transport around the face of our graph gamma is trivial. Okay, so let's consider now a bit more complicated graph than just this one. So let's have a look to a graph with a closed loop, a closed faced, a face. So let's choose an orientation. So this is a given graph, which is, of course, dual to a triangulation. Okay, so if I look at the dual, so now you see that the face is dual to a vertex in the triangulation. So maybe this color is not quite a good choice, so let's. And so here, if you try to do this, the dual graph here yeah, so of course it's not going to be good if I start like this. Okay, so I'm not very good at drawing, so I hope you have the picture here. Okay, so this is in white, it's just my graph, and this is a dual, okay? So this is a triangulation. And it's a dual to my graph. So I can note it like this. And this is really my graph. And so I'm going to call this vertex V, V1, V2. And here I have so X. Let's say that this is X1. No. So E1, sorry. E2. And here I have some. Then parallel transported E and parallel transported. And this is the edge E for the moment. Okay, so this is 1, 2, and E. So then we need to choose an ordering here. So you see so for each of these edge now, I have a group element associated. This is my graph, so you know that I have a H associated to each of these edge. And so now I'm saying that the flatness, it's what I wrote here, can be translated into the fact that for any closed, so any face of your graph, so you see that you have holonomy all around. So now we are going to say that this is my face F. We want that GF, which is here the product of my holonomy, or H, let's try to keep the notation I used from the beginning. HE is equal to identity. Okay, so this is our, going to be our flatness constraint in this framework, where E belongs to the face. And so here, explicitly, if you choose this orientation, you get that this is equal to H E1 times H E minus 1 times H E2 minus 1 is equal to identity. Okay, so this is our flatness constraint. And so from this flatness constraint, I'm going to define a new operator, a kind of Hamiltonian, in fact, three of them. So because the idea is, so now, so at each point, you know that we have the Gauss constraint. So this means that each of these vertex, which are trivalent, can be in the dual picture is a triangle. Okay, and so what is going to do the flatness constraint is going to tell you how to glue together these triangles. Okay, and indeed here, so it's a flat, so the fact that it's identity, this means that it's flat, and so this means that we want to glue together this triangle in such a way that the geometry we obtain can be embedded in a flat 3D geometry. Okay, so in particular here, what we're going to get is we're going to get exactly, so we are going to glue together three triangles, so we're going to get, you see what we, this is a picture of which object? It's a tetrahedron, okay? Because you have three, these three triangles and the base is going to be given by this one when we glue them. Okay, so we're going to get that thing. So let's define now the which operator we're going to look at. So I'm going to define the following operator, and the justification for this operator is that at the quantum level, we're going to get directly a nice equation, which are going to give you directly the sig j symbol, which appear in the spin foam approach, okay? So, and which is, so let's define our, so this approach I'm going to describe here, sorry about that. Let's give me the reference. Maybe, because so it's not in Bianca's lecture notes, so it's the Hamiltonian constraint. In 3D Riemannian. So Riemannian just means that it's Euclidean, okay. Gravity, and this paper is with so Valentin, which used to be postdoc here, Valentin Boson, and Laurent Predel, that you should all know very well, and you can also find it on archive. And then this approach has been generalized to the spin-off formalism and then to the case with cosmological constant, but here is just for flat gravity, so with a zero cosmological constant. Okay, so what is the following operator I'm going to define? So this was just for to give you the reference. So I'm going to define an operator associated to each vertex of my face. So in this case, I will have three operators, okay? And it's defined as the scalar. So I'm looking at the scalar product between, so the flux operator E1. So for this, I did it here with, so let's just call it E1 with E2 minus, and I'm comparing that with E1, and then E2, which has been parallel transported around the face. Okay, so I'm parallel transported around the face, so by this, I'm going to have some issue with the notation, I think. So usually we are using G and X for the, so G for the autonomy and X for the triad, and I'm trying to keep the same notation as Bianca, but it's a bit confusing. Okay, and so here, if you, so this, I use the adjunct action of H, but if you use, you can rewrite this really as, so saying that this is E1, the scalar product of E1, the component I with the identity minus the rotation associated to this SU2 element, IJ, EJ. Okay, so it's really, in fact, the idea is really here. So you have a constraint. It's H of F minus identity. This is your flatness constraint in this formalism. And here I'm just projecting this constraint on the flux variable. So if you, I don't know if you remember, but at some point I told you that from the flatness constraint, also if you project this flatness constraint on a normal to the hypersurface, and a tangent vector on this hypersurface, you would recover the Dirac deformation hypersurface algebra, okay? Or if you want, you will recover the vector constraint and scalar constraint we have in 4D, even with the from the flatness constraint. And so here the idea is that instead of choosing a hypersurface and a normal vector to this hypersurface, here we are choosing a kind of non-orthonormal basis to project our constraint. And we still have 3 degrees of freedom because we're still going to have these 3 projectons at each vertex, okay, of my face here. Okay, so this is my constraint, and I just want to give you what is the geometrical interpretation, and then the next step is, of course, going to go to the kinematical Hilbert space and then quantize the constraint. And so this is the constraint we're going to quantize as a flatness constraint, okay? So what is the geometrical interpretation now of this? Constraint. And so again, what does it mean that F AB, so the flatness constraint, is equal to zero, is that your 2D surface with its geometry can be embedded into a flat three space. Okay? And so here it's exactly the interpretation we're going to get from this constraint. So what does it mean that you can embed a geometry into a flat three space? So from the point of view of a triangulation, here, if you are dealing with flat geometry of triangulation, this means that your 3D angle between two triangles, so let's maybe let's call maybe this triangle, which is associated to the vertex V1, T1, and this triangle, T2, okay? So you have two triangles, so you can define the angle, okay? A 3D angle between these two triangles, a dihedral angle. So this is what I'm going to denote. So here, it's between two adjacent triangles, T1 and T2. Okay, so if the gluing of these two triangles can be embedded in a flat 3D geometry, this means that you can give this, you have a standard expression for this function in terms of 2D dihedral angle, okay? So here you get that so this is the standard where it's defined by the angle x. It's a function of x, e, and e tilde here. And so this is really given by the 2D angle I defined before. Well, this is given by the scalar product between your flux variable, seen as three vector. And so I'm just giving, so this is a well-known formula that you can just find, I guess, on Wikipedia, just saying what is the dihedral angle between two triangles, okay? But of course, this is valid only if you're dealing with Riemannian geometry or if you're on flat geometry. If you are in a 3D flat space. Okay, E, and here the sign. Okay, but so the expression is not so important. It's a it's a standard expression of dihedral angle between two triangles when you work in a flat 3D space, so what you're usually used to do. So it's really the expression you can find, I guess, on internet, Wikipedia. And so now, with our framework, we have another notion of dihedral angle. And so the idea here is that really this Hamiltonian here, this function is going to relate these two notions. So the standard notion, so here this is a notion in 3D flat space. And here, without any assumption on the flatness or anything, we can write another notion of 3D angle. So the other, so this is the first notion. Of dihedral angle can be built so between here I'm talking between triangles so you can build the normal to a given triangle so let's say T1 by taking the wedge product of your x variable okay so let's consider then you have the normal to your triangle T1 is given by the wedge product of so E and E1. Okay, so I'm at this vertex V, so it's it's between the tilde, so it means that it's with respect to the definition, you know, they have been parallel transported along the edge E, okay? And then you have the second normal for your other triangle, it's exactly the same, but A JK between, so now the flux E2 and the flux E. Okay, so now you want to, we can define the cosine of the angle by taking the scalar product of these two vectors, but now we have to be careful because they are not living at the same place, so we have to parallel transport this one to V1, okay? So this one is at V1, and this one is at V2, so we need to parallel transport this N2 at V1. So this means that we can define here the cosine of, so I'm going to change notation for the dihedral angle here, T1, T2, as the scalar product, so here the sign is just convention, so it's N, T1 scalar, the parallel transported vector N2. So to go from V2 to V1, you use HE here. Because you want to take the dot product in the common frame and T2. OK. And so if you rewrite now what this means, you get that here, this can be written as using the fact that these are defined in terms of the E variable, the flux variable, you can write that this is E tilde with the adjoint action of H E on E2 minus, here you can use a 2D angle at some point, E1 E. Divided by the sine. And so here what you can just check that what your Hamiltonian is doing is really comparing these two notions of dihedral angle.
Is there a rho in the subscript?
Sorry?
In the expression to the left. N-I-T-2.
Here?
Yeah, E-K.
Yeah, it's a E because I haven't, yeah.
Oh.
It's just because I haven't chosen I just keep the name. So I call it 1, 2, and E. So that's why I keep. So here, the holonomy to parallel transport your vector from V2 to V1 is HE, okay? Which is the holonomy associated to this edge E here. Okay, so here this means that if you look at this expression, so if you compare just the expression above this one, which is a standard expression for a dihedral angle between two adjacent triangles in a flat 3D space, and this expression which comes from our variable, where we defined these are just the normal to the triangle 1, okay? So this is the normal to the triangle at the vertex V1. T1 at V1, okay? And this one is the normal to the triangle T2 at V2, and so we define the cosine of the dihedral angle at the scalar product between these two vectors, but we need to make sure that these two vectors live at the same frame, at the same place. So that's why we parallel transport this vector to V1. Okay? So then now, and if now you compare this expression with this expression and just the expression above, okay, knowing that E1, E2 is just this cosine here, you just get that, so let's maybe move this one a bit. So here, yeah, so I'm going from ups to here. You just get that HVF can be written as, so you have some sine of angle, but this is not so important. Time the cos, the standard cosine of the dihedral angle minus this additional notion of dihedral angle. And so with this, what does this mean? This really means that, so with your, and this is only one part of the constraint, of the flatness constraint. You have to remember that we have one of each at each vertex, okay? So we have three HVF for our triangle face here. And so what does it mean? That means that if you want to, so if this constraint is satisfied, this means that the way you are going to glue together two triangles is in such a way that this can be embedded in a flat 3D geometry, okay? So this is exactly the meaning of this constraint. So here, gluing of two triangle done in such a way that um, and be embedded. Okay, so this is in a flat 3 geometry. So this is the geometrical interpretation of this constraint. Here we're going to quantize now. So of course, here you need to check that the algebra of this constraint is closed. But so this is the case. I'm not going to do it here. So here, what I just told you is that the flatness constraint can translate as the fact that for each face of your graph now, the holonomy around this face is trivial. And you can project this constraint in such a way that you get this Hamiltonian, which really tell you that the geometry you get can be embedded in a flat 3D geometry. And we're going to see that at the quantum level, this gives you a recursion relation, which defines uniquely the 6J symbol, which is really, the 6J symbol is really the building block of the spin foam approach. So we are going to relate both approaches. OK, so any questions? So let's go back maybe to the first blackboard to see where we are and what we're going to do next. I hope it was not too confusing, this kind of geometrical approach. OK, so we are really at the first step of the Dirac program, because we are just still at the classical level where we have chosen our basic variable. OK, so now the next step we are going to see tomorrow is to promote this variable to operators and define an Hilbert space. So this means that we are going to need to define inner product associated to this operator. And then this will be the first step. Then the second step will be to write our constraint as operator, okay, and then solve this constraint. So tomorrow we are going to focus on a subsystem, which are going to be just one edge, okay, meaning that I'm going just to consider one holonomy and one flux variable and tell you what are how they behave as operator, and then build the inner product. And then next week, we're going to deal with the constraint. Maybe tomorrow, we will have time to talk about the Gauss constraint. And then next week, we're going to talk about the dynamics. And once we will have the dynamics, we will go to the spin foam approach. OK? OK, any question? Yeah.
In that definition over there, when you have a difference of two cosines,
yeah,
is the idea that you're comparing how far that is from what you would have in 3D flat space? Are we comparing how different it is?
Yeah, so here it's really, so this is what you expect if you are in 3D flat space, okay? This is the expression. So now this is my expression of my h here, and so you see that I have this cosine is the dot product between E1 and E2, and so I have this term, and so now I'm also saying that with our variable, we can really define another notion of dihedral angle by building using holonomy and flux. Okay, we can build normal to our triangles and then compare them, because we have the holonomy to parallel transport, and compare them at the same point, and you get this new expression where you see that here this is part of H, and this is exactly what you have here. Okay, so really this means that you can write H as a comparison between what you want, what you get if you are in a 3D flat space when you write dihedral angle, and what we get in our formalism. And since this is a constraint, this means that this has to be zero. So these two notions has to be equal here.
But why do you need the signs outside?
Sorry?
Sign of.
No, it's just because it's really the equality here. So if you compare here what I wrote here, and you compare these three. But then, of course, yeah, the important part is for the interpretation is this difference here. OK, any other questions here? You look a bit, Alessandro, are you OK? You look a bit lost.